Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, this is Mickey Desai. I'm your host for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. Happy to be speaking with Therese Jardine. And I'm pretty sure I got that wrong, didn't I?
Nope, you got that right.
Excellent. Thank you. I wanted to point out to our listeners that you are the principal of your own company called Strategic Event Procurement. Your bio line caught me on LinkedIn. You take the pain out of procurement for event organizers and agencies so they can focus on delivering a great event. And that's what I hope we can talk about today. Can we start from the basics and talk about what event procurement really is?
Sure. It's, you know, event procurement is a little different than other kinds of procurement. When people think of procurement, they think of purchasing. Mm-hmm. And it's really a strategy. So event procurement in particular is the strategy around which the event producers will identify and use their suppliers and make their way through the entire, we call it the procure to pay process.
Okay.
And what makes it kind of unique for events is, you know, you need to engage with an event planner, you need to engage with an event registration company, and those are ones that you can usually find in advance and have on your roster. But every time you go to a new destination, you have to find a new catering company and a new venue and usually new, you know, a supplier who's going to do security and things like that. So since events move around, the suppliers that we use are going to be different in almost every case. And so that makes the finding them, hiring them, and paying them a little more complicated than, say, consulting services. Does that kind of help clarify?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And so you take the pain out of procurement for event organizers. You streamline the process for them. I imagine you save them a bit of time in getting their events together.
Yes. Yeah. And money, hopefully.
Oh, cool. Right. All right. So let's move forward from that then and talk about what you're noticing in the sector today in terms of what are nonprofits doing with their events during the times of pandemic. Are you seeing a lot of people going virtual? Are you seeing anything innovative? What's crossing your desk these days?
Well, I volunteer for a couple of nonprofits and I've donated to several out here in this area. And they are having to take their fundraising galas on some kind of a virtual level. We're not going to be able to do these in-person galas for a while. And I think one of the positive things that's going to come out of all of this is that many nonprofits are going to learn that they can raise just as much money following a simpler path than the traditional gala where they're having to procure items for auction and do a full, you know, 300 person seated meal.
Exactly.
And, you know, and I think it's important to engage with donors, and I don't think that live events are going to go away altogether, but I think that nonprofits will find that they're as able to raise money through either these hosted virtual events or other ways of engaging with their donors, and that will yield as much money without the heavy lift.
I agree. I think now's the time for people to really experiment and be innovative and get away from the notion that in-person events are the way, the formulaic way to raise money for their causes. I think, I know it's kind of painful to not be able to do the thing you're used to doing, but I think you're going to find that this is actually easier to some degree.
Well, and sometimes when you're forced to do something differently, it just gives you a whole different perspective on what other possibilities there could be.
Yep. We may have talked about this before when we did our preliminary call, but what do you think about the notion of replacing a lot of the steps with, like if a nonprofit were to bill it as a non-event and what gets shipped out to the participant's house as a basket of goodies that they're supposed to open up and consume during the actual, you know, virtual piece? What do you think about that? And is that kind of thing hard to coordinate?
Well, corporates are doing that. If part of the event is going to be a mixology class, then they'll send out the cocktail kit to the participants. The problem is that distribution of stuff like that is expensive.
Yeah.
And so, and it's one thing for, you know, a commercial event to be engaging with their audiences, but I think for nonprofits, it's, it's not, I don't think it's necessary. I think it's something that would eat into their bottom line, and it wouldn't be something that would be necessary in order to fully engage the audience.
Right, right. It doesn't necessarily add to the event.
No, I don't think for a nonprofit, I think that it wouldn't add. And in fact, it might backfire because, you know, they might be thinking, well, you know, you spent all this money to send this to me and now you're asking me for money, you know, mm-hmm. what gives?
Right. Good point. Very good point.
And, you know, and I've seen a couple of them now. The thing that's a challenge for nonprofits is doing a virtual event really has a fair amount of production associated with it. In order to do what people typically think of as a virtual event, where you're actually kind of simulcasting from a location out to, you know, lots of different viewers. Mm-hmm. What I'm seeing the nonprofits do is kind of do pre-recorded segments, and then they'll pull that all together and do either a Facebook Live or, you know, maybe even a Zoom meeting where they'll send out the invitation to all of their donors, and then everybody comes on at the same time to watch what I would call pre-recorded content. And then there's usually maybe a host who will come on and moderate, you know, what's being passed around. Mm-hmm. Now, having said that, you know, that's how I've seen a couple of them done. And one recently for Habitat for Humanity, they had a local newscaster as the MC. And then they had, they did have a video of one of the homeowner recipients of, you know, of a Habitat for Humanity home. And then they had a couple of volunteers and whatnot that would come onto the Zoom call and give a few little comments on how things work with them within the nonprofit. And so that one, you know, that one I think was well produced, and since they were using Zoom, I think it was Zoom, it wasn't very expensive. Mm-hmm. But they didn't make it an interactive event. So, you know, you couldn't have people who were viewing, raising their hand and asking questions and things like that.
Ah, okay. And you think that interactive ones go better?
Well, it depends on the content.
Yeah.
You know, that for sure, it depends on the content. You know, if you think about a virtual event for in the commercial space, I recently participated in one. Most of us pre-recorded our content, and, you know, it was all, you know, sent in and was available on a website. At the designated session time, you know, the speaker who had recorded the content came into a chat room and was kind of the host of chat comments back and forth between, you know, the different participants. And that's it's engaging for the attendees, but the production on that is significant.
Right.
And so that, you know, that, and for a nonprofit, that would be overkill, I think.
All right. So I'm going to walk this back to like square one for the event planning process. If I'm sitting on a nonprofit staff and it's time to produce the annual gala event, the first decision I have to make is virtual or not virtual. Presumably not these days, virtual is the way to go. The invitation then has to describe what's going to happen. And the invitation will then say, this is going to be a live theater-like production, or it's going to be something else. And do you think the invitation needs to say that?
No, the invitation doesn't need to be that specific.
Okay.
You know, and honestly, you know, having gone through this, you know, with a couple of them, you know, the save the date went out a long time ago, and mm-hmm. and it was intended to be a physical in-person gala. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then they sent communication that said, all right, well, you know, we can't have it in person, and so we will do something digitally. But they didn't really, you know, you don't have to go into a whole lot of detail about it. You know, really all you need to do is, as you get closer to the event, you need to provide the login information for the participants.
Okay.
You know, and in some cases they would have like a virtual table captain. And so that person would, you know, kind of corral some peeps to join, and then they might be in their own little kind of a breakout room where they can chat with each other, and you know, maybe the table captain is encouraging donations and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not entirely sure how the technology works on that, but I've been seeing it come through on some of the invitations that I've received. And of course, I'm not able to attend all of them. And the one where they had the table captains, I wasn't able to discern how they made that work.
Okay. Yeah, that would be interesting to figure that out. Okay. So per the notes that you had sent me and that I had gone through earlier, there's a couple things I wanted to touch on: a live broadcast versus something that's pre-produced. You said live is kind of overhead heavy and very expensive to produce. And why is that?
Well, because if you're going to do a live broadcast, there is more consideration for things like lighting. You're probably going to have multiple cameras so that you can pan from different directions. If you're going to be doing that live, there's digital streaming that you have to do, which means your internet bandwidth has to be really potent in order to push all that sound and video through and out into the interwebs in a productive way. It can be, depending on where the nonprofit is, you know, their office infrastructure just might not have as robust an internet solution as a major corporation like Microsoft or somebody like that.
Right.
So, you know, that's something where, you know, then you might have to bring in some more, they call it pipe, you know, bring in some more pipe or make the pipe bigger so that you can stream this content seamlessly.
Right. Right.
So, you know, I mean, and we started out with one of the nonprofits trying to go down that path, and, you know, we were looking at, it was going to be upwards of, you know, $40,000-$50,000.
And that's huge. Yeah,
that's cost prohibitive for a nonprofit. So the alternative is to do a pre-recorded, or a hosted virtual event. And, you know, the one thing I'd say is you want to have an MC to keep content and keep the show moving. And so, like, the last one that I attended where we had the newscaster was the MC. You know, that was one where they did have some pre-recorded, but they did pass it around to different speakers. And, you know, the MC was able to make sure, you know, the next person up was ready to go. But you need to have a producer there to help make sure that the connection goes to the right place.
Right, right. A producer to supervise the entire production effort, of course, and the MC to actually be the person on camera or on microphone, at least, to keep the thing moving.
Right, right. I mean, even with Zoom, you know, getting, you know, switching people, you know, switching over to the next speaker, you know, muting everybody else so that you don't get a lot of background noise and, you know, just the basics. It's, if you're the presenter, it's super hard to do that without looking like you're actually also trying to produce the event. So that's why I would recommend that. The other thing I recommend is do a dress rehearsal, because, you know, I think we've all been using Zoom a lot, but there are features in Zoom that people don't know about, maybe. And so it gets everybody comfortable with what's going to happen next. It also kind of does the, you know, you can time the presentations and make sure that you're not going to go over time or worse, not fill the time.
Right.
And then it kind of just, you know, like I said, it helps smooth out the transitions from one speaker or one segment to the next.
Yep. I think that's going to end up being the title of this episode: do a dress rehearsal. I think that's
that's
pretty
gosh.
Critical. Yeah.
It is. And I think, even for, you know, a live event, you know, you may not do end to end, but there's definitely a run of show meeting where it's okay, next up is this, next up is that. And at 10:05, then this speaker is going to come on the stage. And it's every bit as important to do that for a virtual event.
Right. If I could, again, take a few steps back here, you know, we're talking about collecting video footage and segments to show an audience via a platform like Zoom or something else. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do the whole production crew thing, is there any reason I would not want to do this on, say, my smartphone or something like that? You know, collect my little segments that way and edit them down into some sort of presentable format, which, again, does not require too much overhead to do your editing. But now at least I don't need to hire an entire production crew if I'm just doing it in the palm of my hand with my smart device.
Well, depending on how savvy your speakers are at doing that, you can. I was actually talking to a client of mine who's helping one of her clients do a virtual event, and it's a pretty distributed audience. and the speakers are pretty distributed. It's a wine distribution company, and they are having their speakers, you know, do kind of a selfie video, because the idea is to try to keep it, you know, all in the family. It's an employee event. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't want to spend, you know, particularly with this, you know, economic time, they didn't want to spend a whole lot of money on production. And so the expectation is everybody's going to be a DIY. Now that's a corporate internal event by employees for employees. For a fundraiser, you might want to invest in a videographer, but if you're pre-recording, you don't have to have all the production. You know, you could either send your speaker to a recording studio to go through, or, you know, in the one case, one of the nonprofits that I volunteer for is a therapeutic writing center. And so they had a videographer come out to the facility, which is beautiful. And they were able to, you know, capture some horses, you know, moving about, and they, you know, they fitted in some footage of, you know, previous times when students were actually riding and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And so that one was kind of a little bit of a mix.
Okay.
But I think the thing to make sure of is, you know, particularly if you're giving some kind of a presentation, is there's some things to keep in mind. Number one is, you know, if you're recording, especially at home, avoid overhead lights or windows or lights behind the presenter. Because if it's an overhead light, you get this weird shadow down the whole front of you.
Right.
That's me, I know.
Right.
You know, and then lights behind you or even a window behind you, it just produces a big glare.
Right.
And so that's makes it just hard to see the presenter. And then presenters have to look at the camera, not at the screen. And that's, yep. You know, I mean, I'm a live presenter. I've given, I can't tell you how many talks. And recording that first presentation was so hard because I had to look at that darn little eyeball at the top of my computer. You know, granted, you have to glance down and look at your notes and whatnot. But when people are on a Zoom call or something like that, they tend to look at the person they're talking to.
Right.
And then that makes you look like you're looking down. So you have to make sure you're looking straight at the camera. And then, you know, like if you're using your cell phone, that means you kind of have to be looking to the left or the right, depending on, you know, what phone you're using.
Yep.
To make sure that you're looking into the camera. You know, limiting noise and distractions. If you can, close your windows, shut the doors, tell everybody else in the house to be quiet. And then the most important thing is to turn off Wi-Fi on all of the other devices that you're not using.
Huh, okay.
And that's what people are finding out the hard way with everybody working from home. You know, you're nothing worse than you're in the middle of a really important something and then your kid decides to start streaming Netflix or play, you know, one of those video games that sucks a lot of juice off the internet. And even, you know, even something as simple as your own cell phone sitting next to you. First of all, if you do have your cell phone sitting next to you, make sure you put it on mute.
Yes.
And but, you know, if you're like me where you've got your emails and whatnot coming through, it's still using bandwidth. And so if you can, you know, turn that off, put it on airplane mode, then you're not going to be getting any of that. And that's kind of a quick trip.
Right. And that's something that's important for the presenters, not necessarily for the viewers.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Because the viewers are, you know, I mean, they're home just watching.
Exactly.
You know, and one thing I've learned just, you know, working with Zoom and Teams and any of the others is video, you know, like if you're doing a video call, That takes a lot of juice too.
Yeah.
Now, if you're doing a virtual event, of course you want people on video because that's part of the engagement of it.
Right. All right. So I'm going to try to do a quick summary of everything we've talked about here.
Okay.
Bear with me and feel free to reel me in if I get something grossly wrong. So you're seeing nonprofits are doing a lot more in the virtual event space instead of the in-person event space. That there are very expensive ways to do it, which are probably not advisable, versus the not so expensive ways to do it, which seems more feasible for nonprofits to do. They don't have to do the full theatrical production that involves multiple cameras, you know, dedicated streaming, things like that. When they do their own events, they collect their own footage and their own show pieces, the show structure. It would be suggested, you would suggest particularly that they use an MC to keep everything moving, maybe also get a producer to oversee the entire affair, even from a technological perspective, and use pre-recorded pieces to convey the nonprofit messaging itself. Once you get all these ducks in a row, do a dress rehearsal. That is critically important to do at least a dry run of the entire thing. And for the people who are actually shooting video, they should avoid their overhead lights, look directly at the camera hole, not the screen itself, and turn off all extraneous Wi-Fi consumption in the house, and of course, limit noise and background distractions.
Yeah, yeah, that pretty well sums it up. Okay. So, you know, of course, there's always going to be inevitably, you know, the dog is going to bark or the landscapers will show up just as you're trying to start this thing.
It never fails.
Yep. Everybody, you know, at this point, you know, people are all kind of aware of what's going on. And I do want to point one thing out, though, is the pre-recorded video for the message, you know, that's something that's usually done at the live galas as well. And that probably should be a produced video because that's your heartstring message. That's the one that you want everybody to, you know, be looking for a Kleenex at the end. And that is not necessarily well done by an amateur. That is something that should be done by someone who's a professional videographer with, mm-hmm. you know, a good mind toward a marketing message.
Someone who can put some polish on it.
Yeah.
Yep. Understood. And agreed. I think that's exactly right. It is your message. It should be branded properly. It should not be clunky.
And that's not any additional expense because every gala I've ever been to has had at least one, if not a couple of these videos, you know, where you see how somebody's life was changed because of their involvement with the agency that you're supporting.
Right. Right.
Here's the more money, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right.
That's awesome. I mean, that's what a gala is intended for.
Yep. Therese, this is fantastic advice. I think I hope a lot of nonprofits can use some of these tips and as they do their stuff at the remainder of this year, because it does look like the remainder of this year is not going to see much in the way of in-person galas happening again. If a listener wanted to be in touch with you, how would you suggest they go about being in touch with you?
Oh, well, they can find me on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Or they could send me an email at Therese, Therese, at strategiceventprocurement.com.
Fantastic. Thank you. And thank you for making the time to do this recording with me today. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Oh, happy to do it, Mickey.
To our listeners, thank you as always for joining us. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to the show and leave us a rating via whatever mechanism you use to listen to the Snapcast. Your 5-star ratings make us more findable by search engines, and we are grateful to you for helping us grow our audience. In the meantime, we'll see you with another episode in a few days.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.